Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And to finish the joke on the air, the running joke, Sean, used to be that in the old Big Ten before they added three more teams, that's where the 11 seed stayed.
The front end of the story on the after show.
Yeah, the Viceroy Hotel. Ah. That's where the 11 seed stays. Okay. It's much funnier if you know the entire story, but I don't think I should tell the entire story.
Let's just say the joint did not get AAA diamond status, I don't think.
Probably. I don't know if it got any diamonds. If you get no diamonds, how good can you be? It's like Chateau Herod. All right, so... Dave Revson in a few moments on the Big Ten tournament, and then Joe Rutter, Pittsburgh Tribune, final half hour. We're going to talk more about Antonio Brown. Look, next week we'll get Jeff Byers on the show to talk about the NCAA Wrestling Championship, which will be at PPG Paints Arena in Pittsburgh. Next year, it goes to the Vikings Stadium. How about that? Now, I believe they're going to do what they do for, like, Syracuse basketball. I know they don't put a curtain down for Syracuse basketball. The NCAAs, though, they did, because I did two games in the Syracuse Regional a few years ago. I remember, I think they put a curtain down in back of the seats. I don't think you can take the mat and you put it out in the center of a football stadium. I just don't think you can do that. I think you take it and you push it to one end. It's an interesting question, though. But this year, they don't have to worry about that. What they do have to worry about this year are tickets. Technically, PPG Paints Arena fits the model, because I believe you have to have, I believe, a minimum of 18,000 seats. They have that, but remember, when you take your, I think PPG Paints Arena actually seats 19,000 for hockey. But remember, in order to do this, you have to take several rows out for the media, for the officials that run the, and administrators who run it. And that eats up seats. Eats up a significant amount. I believe there are actually fewer seats available for this year's NCAA Wrestling Championship than last year in Cleveland. Now, obviously, next year, man, you can find every friend and family member you want. There will be seats for you. Let's face it. It's going to be interesting to see how it works. But we'll talk to Jeff about that next week as Penn State goes for its 8th in 9 years. Wow. Our play-by-play call of the day, for the first time ever, Gardner Webb will be in the NCAA men's basketball tournament.
For the first time, the Gardner Webb Bulldogs are champions of the Big South and headed to the NCAA tournament.
You know what? I think that's great. I think in the end, obviously you'll have conference champions all over the place. It doesn't really matter which one of the four, say one of the four teams in the Big Ten ends up winning it. You know, whether it's Michigan, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Purdue. Does it really matter which one wins it? if it's one of those four, they're going to be in anyway. You have 36 at-large teams. Those 36 at-large teams should be ranked 1 through 36 as the best of the rest. I think it's great that Gardner Webb can win and get in. I think it's great that Colgate and Bucknell, the winner, will go in. I think that's great. Now, the Cinderella thing is always fun the first couple of days of the tournament. I'll tell you where it does not get fun anymore, and you can see in the TV ratings, it's when they're in the Sweet 16 or the Elite 8. I'm like, okay, anybody here want to watch Kentucky? But in the opening rounds, it's awesome. There's a lot of good basketball out there. A lot of good basketball. What's really fun will be the Big Ten tournament. And I think it's really cool we get to go to Dave Revson's place, where I know he's put a lot of hard work in to make all this happen. Dave, I can't wait to be in your house for this tournament.
Yeah, Steve, you'll love what I've done with the place. I have statues out front.
It's great.
I mean, it's really something, man.
I also think it was a great touch. It was not just Jordan, but for you to put Stan Mikita and Bobby Hull together, it's a nice touch on your part.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, it was a little homage to my childhood. So I feel like that's kind of what you got to do. You know, you have to be true to your roots. So there's a little bit of both. Hawks were a bigger deal when I was really young, and then, of course, the Bulls got good. So you got to balance it out.
Yeah, that's really – see, it's classy on your part. That's the kind of guy you are.
Right.
When Penn State finally broke through in this season, you did the game. The game was at Northwestern.
Yes.
As you have watched them from that point on, because obviously you were trying to get a feel for them going through the first 10 in the conference, what do you think changed for Penn State?
I think a couple of things. I would say confidence was the biggest thing. It just seemed like in those games where, you know, in the midst of that 0-10 start, they lost so many close games, and they would do just enough to lose. Now, they'd figure out a way to lose the game. They'd you know, kind of steal defeat from the jaws of victory, right? I mean, and so to me, that was a big part of it. It was just like they made their free throws down the stretch. They did all of the little things that good teams do. And before, they were doing all the things that teams do. I also think the younger guys got better. I mean, Rashir Bolton was, you could see from the beginning that he was really, really good. But I feel like he's kind of hit a little bit different stride. Lamar Stevens is obviously the straw that stirs the drink, and he's just been tremendous. I mean, I guess it's a few different things, but to me, it's confidence of the young guys. It's believing they can win. It's figuring, you know, seeing yourselves win a game. I just think that's huge. And then you believe that you can do it again, and you continue to do it. So I guess those would be the biggest things for me.
On the coaching front, I actually want to go to Matt Painter on this. I mean, I think sometimes when you look at the body of a season, you got to turn the clock back to what your thoughts were in October. He's replacing four starters, but it's surrounded by Carson Edwards. What kind of job did Matt Painter do to get them in a position where they're a Big Ten co-champion?
Absolutely exceptional, Steve. I mean, you look at that team, more than 5,100 career points off of last year's team. If you take Carson Edwards out of the equation, they had 11 career starts returning this season. And they end up sharing the Big Ten title in what I think you and I can agree, well, I'll certainly say it, I won't put words in your mouth, I think is one of the best, deepest years that we've seen in the Big Ten in the time that I've been following it, and I've been following it for a long, long time, as I know you have as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think the job he's done is incredible. And to do it with no top 60 recruits on the roster, that's what's really exceptional. I think a lot of times people, first of all, I think there's almost like this pejorative sense of a developmental program. People look at that term as somehow it's negative.
Right.
It means that you can't go out and recruit McDonald's All-Americans, which isn't necessarily true. I mean, look, you know, Caleb Swanigan was a big-time recruit. Purdue gets some big-time recruits. But by and large, they build their team off of four-star and three-star guys. It's mainly not five-star guys. And I think that's the ultimate compliment of a coach. I mean, I think Michigan's a developmental program.
Yeah.
Do they get five-star guys every once in a while, like Mitch McGarry? I mean, guys like that occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, basically it's 3- and 4-star kids who they turn into great players. Michigan State, to a certain extent, is a developmental program. And that's what Purdue is. I think the best programs in our league, Wisconsin is the ultimate example. And, again, I think that's why, for whatever reason, people look at that as kind of a negative term. Oh, well, they redshirt McDonald's All-Americans like Brian Butch there because, you know, they're not ready. No one's ready. You have to learn the system. It's you have to develop. That's a negative thing. I see it as an extremely positive thing that speaks volumes about the coaches we have in this league. And I think Matt Painter's maybe this year's team is one of the greatest examples that we've seen of developing talent and then figuring out where's the right place to plug guys in, taking a walk-on like Grady Eifert and making him a really valuable part of your team. I think that speaks to his coaching acumen.
Yeah, Eifert's missed a 3 in 2 weeks. So let's get to the overall league here. I'm always big at this time of the year of looking, quote, at older teams. The Big Ten, I think, has some marvelous freshmen in it. But I also feel like the league's an older league compared to other people. And what kind of a plus is that moving forward for the league?
I think that helps. I think having veterans is really important, having guys who have been through it. I'm with you. I mean, I've always kind of believed that there's value in that. That being said, I mean, I'm not diminishing Maryland's chances, let's say, as the 8th youngest team in the country because I think their freshmen are really, really good. You have enough veteran leadership in there with Cowan kind of running the show and Bruno Fernando. I mean, I know he's only a sophomore, but you know, he's through half his college career at this point. He's probably through almost his entire college career. He's probably going to go pro. But in a typical college career, he's through half of it. So, again, I wouldn't diminish their chances because they're young. But, yeah, I absolutely think there's value in having veterans, having Cassius Winstons and Ethers Edwards and Xavier Simpsons and guys like that when you go up and down the rosters in the Big Ten. Lamar Stevens, players like that who have been through it. I think there's immense value in that.
Penn State will get Minnesota in the opening round on Thursday night. How do you view Minnesota down the stretch?
Well, I did their game against Purdue, which was their best win. They did not play well other than that late in the season.
Right.
And, you know, kind of laid an egg, I thought, on Friday. And I mean, just came out looking really uninspired.
Yeah.
I don't know if they just kind of felt like, well, we did what we needed to do. I sure hope not, because this doesn't happen in a vacuum. I think that win got them into the tournament. But, man, it's hard because, you know, teams can get upset. And all of a sudden, teams that were locks for the tournament are still locks, but now someone else from their league's going too. So, you know, if I'm Minnesota, I come into this game feeling like, hey, we really got to figure out a way to win. And Penn State has certainly been a lot hotter than Minnesota has been down the stretch. Individual talent wise, Minnesota's really good, man.
Yeah, they sure are.
You know, like, I mean, Amir Coffey is a fabulous athlete. Jordan Murphy, to me, is one of the most remarkable players we've seen in this league. I mean, this kid, Steve, you know him, you've watched him. I mean, he's probably 6'6".
Yeah.
And only Jerry Lucas has ever got more rebounds in the Big Ten than him.
I know.
I mean, it is an incredible story. Oturu, the freshman's really good, but, you know, talent-wise, look, Penn State's not lacking for talent. I think that's a really high-level game between two very good teams, and where the season to start over again, and Penn State could pick up playing like this and go through the season. There's no doubt in my mind they'd be an NCAA tournament team. So to me, those are two teams that are at the level of the NCAA tournament playing in the 7-10 game in the Big Ten. Yeah. So I think that tells you everything you need to know about the league.
I think we probably get around to this question every year, but does this feel like as an intriguing a week for the Big Ten as you've seen?
I think so. I think, look, you have enough bubble teams that becomes really interesting. Does Indiana's going to be a fascinating story here going forward. Because if they win the league, of course they're automatically in. So then it ceases to be a story. But if they don't win the league now, you're looking at 15 losses.
Yep.
And that would tie for the most losses ever for a team that's made the NCAA tournament as an at-large. It was the Vanderbilt team that Northwestern played a couple of years ago and Alabama last year, the only two to make it with 15. And yet you look at their quad one win, Steve, as you know, and there are only, I think it's like 15 schools in the country that have more quad one wins. And they're not your run-of-the-mill quad one wins either. I mean, they swept Michigan State. They embarrassed Marquette. So, yeah. I don't know. It's a really fascinating team. But you can't overlook losing 12 of 13.
Right.
I mean, you know, that happened. You can't erase that.
I know. And yet, down the stretch, there aren't many teams at the moment playing better than they are. I mean, they're not only winning, they're actually blowing teams out now.
Yeah, they were fantastic yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, and really good against Illinois in a game I frankly thought they'd probably lose.
Yeah.
And they killed them in Champaign. So, who knows? I think they're interesting. I think Ohio State's really interesting. Man, they needed to pull that game out yesterday and couldn't figure out a way to do it. So, they're very much on the bubble, in my opinion. I think Minnesota's tangentially on the bubble. I still feel like they're probably a little more comfortable than those other ones, but their metrics aren't great. So, you know, their metrics read those of a bubble team. So I think that's always really interesting. As far as kind of who wins it, I don't know that that's quite as intriguing unless it is someone, unless Penn State makes a crazy run or Indiana makes a run or Iowa. Is it going to enhance the resume of Michigan or Michigan State or Purdue or even if it's Wisconsin? I don't know that it does that much, but I just think the fun of it is going to be that you can go into virtually every game and say, man, I don't really know who's going to win. And I think that makes it fun. And that's what the league's been all year. It's been a huge boon to our network because we've had good game after good game on our air. And I just think it's drummed up the level of interest, because sometimes this is a sport where the more casual fans say, oh, I'll get interested in it in March. But I think it's been so intriguing this year. I mean, I use the ultimate example of when Penn State was in last place, which, of course, is a while ago now since they ended up with a bye in the conference. And the first-place team comes in, and the last-place team beats the first-place team, and no one bats an eye. And to me, that tells you everything you need to know about the league.
Well, Dave, I appreciate the fact you gave me a seat at the table in your house. Very nice. I look forward to seeing you in Chicago.
Absolutely, Steve. And, yeah, look, just be careful, all right? We've put a lot into this place.
I know.
You know, I know you can be a bull in a china shop sometimes. Yeah. So
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Treat it with the proper reverence.
I mean, I will. In fact, I'm going to read Miss Manners on the plane on the way out.
All right, my friend. Always a pleasure. Look forward to spending time with you.
You bet, Dave. Thanks so much.
All right, Steve. Take care, buddy.
Dave refs and Big Ten Network. We'll come back with more in a moment. Joe Rutter, Pittsburgh Tribune, final half hour on Antonio Brown as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Up your new car game in March with a new Kia for just $99 a month from Sunbury Motors Kia.
Wanna see ya in Kia.
Right, lease a 2019 Kia Forte LX for just $99 a month for only 24 months. Drive away in a 2019 Kia Soul for only $149 a month. With deals like this, you'll have to hurry in to get in under the buzzer. Sunbury Motors Kia also has up to $10,000 off MSRP on a 2018 Kia Cadenza and $8,000 off a 2019 Sorento LX V6 with convenience package. Everyone's a winner with Kia because all new Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. Up your new car game in March with Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Leases are for 24 months, 10,000 miles per year, $3,500 total due inside or equivalent rate. No security deposit required. Tax and tags extra. Discounts include all applicable rebates. Offers expire 3/31/19. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to Kia.com.
Great to have you with us on the show today. We're lucky we get some good people on this show. Rever's one of the best. You know, once Sean became the producer, we were able to get these people on. I'm sorry. Was I not supposed to reveal that? No?
We upgraded? Wow. That true?
Oh, my goodness. It's not funny. Oh, my goodness. Now, this is going to be, for me, a steal from Dick Girardi. But I am going to use it on the show tonight with Pat. And I'll give Dick attribution. I mean, because I went back and I had to look it back up myself, too. So,
Well, he's been in more gyms than you. I mean, coming the least.
But that's not it, though. It's
right.
Is he took the time to look up. I'm missing a team. How do I miss a team? How do I miss a team out of this? About what the records are of everybody that Penn State's faced this season. We could tell you that it is the number two schedule. We can certainly do that. It's the number two schedule in the country.
Strongest schedule, okay? Or most difficult?
Second. Well, it's the second number two schedule ranked in the country.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Okay, I got them all. Before we get to Joe Rutter in the next half hour, I'm going to give you the records of the teams that Penn State faced this year. I'll just do basics right now. 16 wins, 24, 15, 20, 20, 23, 22, 17, 23, 21, 19, 17, 20, 26, 22, 16, 25, 21, 19, 14, 23, 13, 18, 11, 11, 26, 22, 23, and 22. Excuse me. A lot of wins.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855. Or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in beautiful downtown Hummel's Wharf. And I am the Today Show, brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades, whether it's auto, home, life, business, whatever it may be. They're going to find you the right insurance so you're completely covered, and they're going to do so at the best price they can find. And boy, if there happens to be a claim, you never want to use your insurance, but it's there. If there's ever a claim, they are going to be there for you, handling it every step of the way, and really take a lot off your plate. That's what a great insurance company does. That is Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And again, great to have you with us. All right, now listen to this. It's the Penn State basketball schedule this year. I think it's one thing to say you're facing the second toughest schedule in the country, statistically. So let's graphically play it out for you. North Florida, 16-17. Jacksonville State, 24-9. DePaul, 15-14. Wright State, 20-12. Bradley, 20-14. Automatic bid NCAA. Virginia Tech, 23-7. Maryland, 22-9. Played them twice. Indiana, 17-14. Colgate, 23-10. NC State, 21-10. Duquesne, 19-12. Alabama, 17-14. UMBC, 20-12. They're not done yet. They play Hartford coming up on Tuesday. Michigan, 26-5. Played them twice. Wisconsin, 22-9. Played them twice. Nebraska, 16-15. Played them twice. Michigan State, 25-6. Iowa, 21-10. Minnesota, 19-12. Rutgers, 14-16, played them twice. Purdue, 23-8. Played them twice. Northwestern, 13-18. Ohio State, 18-13. Illinois, 11-20. How about that? I mean, does that graphically tell you what they've had, what they've gone through this year? They played 17 games this season, because some of these are doubles. 17 games this season against teams that won 20 or more this season. They played 25 games this season against teams with winning records. And some of those winning records might get into the NCAA. Indiana, Ohio State, Alabama. They might get in as at-larges. Duquesne's going after its 20th win when they play St. Joe's in the opening round of the Atlantic 10 tournament. That could be another 20-game winner. I hope that graphically tells you what they've navigated to get themselves to this point. Okay. Let's go back to the Antonio Brown story. Because Sean and the Biffer worked very hard overnight to get him moved someplace. The key was Sean insisted on a third. The Biffer kept insisting on a fifth.
Yeah,
That's what I ended up with.
I tried. But the weight is lifted off our shoulders. We can move forward.
Well, Joe Rutter will help us move forward. Joe, great to have you back with us on the show.
Yeah, good to be here. And it's funny, I heard you talking about leapering. How, like, 5 minutes into legal tampering, all of a sudden all these deals are being announced. That's amazing that 5 minutes worth of negotiation. That's a record.
Is it amazing how just you can come to an agreement that fast? It's amazing how that happens.
Yeah, exactly. No, they never talked before. No.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's why it makes the Bryce Harper thing so mysterious. It seemed to take months.
That's right.
Okay, Antonio Brown is finally a Raider. They get a third and a fifth for it. So what was your evaluation when you saw it?
Well, I mean, they didn't get the compensation they wanted. It definitely wasn't significant, as Kevin Colbert said. But really, they didn't have the leverage. Once Antonio Brown pulled the power move with Buffalo, they had to scramble and get what they could. They just wanted him out. Right. They don't want to deal with the headaches. They don't want to have to deal with another Le'Veon Bell type of situation where you have an unhappy player who may or may not report, who wants a new deal. I just think they were fed up and just at that point realized, hey, let's just get what we can and move on.
Yeah, you know, I said earlier that I felt that Brown essentially quit because of what happened week 17 and ended up getting what he wanted out of it. I mean, do you view it the same way, Joe, or being around it, do you have a different viewpoint of it?
Oh, no, he definitely got what he wanted. I mean, he wanted a contract all along. And, you know, I don't know if he had in the back of his mind that that's what he would do in week 17 to get this moving. But, you know, it seems like just the way his behavior was all year, he was unhappy. He lashed out a few times at the media when he talked. You know, he went off and went home a couple times. You know, there definitely was something going on, and it had to have been money related because it seems like that's all this guy really cares about. But yeah, no, he got what he wanted. He wanted the money. I don't think he really cared which team, as long as he got the money to back it up, and the Raiders were more than willing to do that.
All right, so Joe, now let's just give everybody a primer. Where does this leave the Steelers now at wide receiver, and what does this do to either free agency or the draft, in your opinion?
Well, I still think it's going to be a priority in the draft. They might try to get somebody here in free agency. They're going to need more than one person. Really, they only have right now three receivers on the roster: Juju Smith-Schuster, James Washington, and Ryan Switzer. And really, if you look back, you know, 3 years ago, none of these guys were even on the roster. Right. So they've got a young group here. They've got to go out and get some. I would think they'll try to get somebody in free agency, you know, like a John Brown if they can, somebody that could fit within their salary parameters. And then, you know, or they wait a little bit and get somebody a little further down. But then they'll go and they'll probably use a second or third round draft pick, possibly a first. I don't think so, though, to get a receiver. They'll definitely get a couple, maybe bring in some, you know, you know, guys that slipped through the free agencies, you know, that maybe were coming off injuries or something like that to maybe help fill out the roster. Darius Hayward Bay was a few years ago, or right. Justin Hunter the last few years. But, yeah, they'll have to address it through free agency and the draft for sure.
Joe, when you look at Brown and Le'Veon Bell, in your opinion, how much of this is the personality of the individual? How much of this is the Steelers? How much of this is the system?
There's probably a little bit in all three of them. The one thing that you know comes out of this is the Steelers are one of, I think, two teams that do not guarantee money after the first year of a contract. They try to get around this by having a higher set signing bonus so they can spread it out. Players want more guaranteed money now. That was at the crux of Le'Veon Bell's problem. That's what, Antonio Brown, he was hitting the point in his contract when he was starting to get the low end of the back end where, he had already made most of his money up front, so he wanted more. So I think it's a lot about the player in the CBA, with it coming to an end, and I think, it says a lot about maybe the dissatisfaction with the franchise tag. There's a lot of things at play here, but I think as they're now, about 8 years into the CBA, the players are really, the flaws have been exposed, and I think the players are starting to take a stand and trying to work the system back in their favor.
There's some interesting personalities, obviously, in that Steeler locker room. One of them happens to be Ben Roethlisberger. Does he even play a role in all this as to how it's played out?
Well, he's getting a lot of blame nationally, and I think a lot of that is unwarranted. He is the quarterback, and yeah, maybe right. He did a few things in practice that Antonio Brown didn't like, but is that reason for a guy to quit on his team and to, basically force his way out of town? I don't think so. I mean, I don't think he's the most beloved guy in the locker room, but he is the only guy, as Kevin Colbert likes to point out, that has a Super Bowl ring from, that's on this roster. So, he does command a certain bit of respect. And, yeah, maybe he does rub some guys the wrong way, but you're going to have that in a locker room of 60 type of players. You're going to have, not everybody's going to get along. But, yeah, I think there is some, but not nearly as much. I mean, Antonio Brown was 99% to blame for all the stuff that happened.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I don't think that's when you went out to the combine, we talked to you when you were driving out. Now you've gone through the experience out there. Did anything strike you that was noteworthy to you?
Oh, boy. Jumping up.
It may be nothing.
Nothing really. I would say, the linebackers, it really kind of stood out that there's two sure first-round guys that the Steelers could be interested in. And after that, it's second- and third-round players. So it's not as deep up top as maybe everybody thought. And again, a lot of the focus was on the quarterbacks, and I didn't pay much attention to that because the Steelers aren't in that market. So, I wasn't dealing with the hot-button issues that are going on in the NFL, like Kyler Murray and things like that.
Interesting. When do you think you might start going out to a combine and looking at quarterbacks?
Well, I think some of that might be known in the next few days here, depending on how long they sign, Ben Roethlisberger to. I mean, that's going to be coming here. It could come later today even, or, probably before Wednesday at 4 o'clock. But I would think in a couple years, depending on his play in 2019, I don't think they'd be ready yet for 2020. But I think they're coming 2 years, I would say, down the road, depending on how he plays. If he just totally slides, then, yeah, you're going to have to push that timetable up. But if he, is remotely like he was the last few years, then you probably got another couple years till you're looking to replace him.
There's always an assumption the Steelers, for obvious reasons, are very slow to move on a coach. So what do you think of the status of Mike Tomlin? We know he's going to be the coach this coming season, but what do you think his status is?
That'll be, how I think the Steelers will view his status will be on whether he gets his extension.
Right.
He's supposed to get two more years added on this summer. That's kind of been the tradition. If they decline that now with 2 years left on his deal, then he's going to go and, he'll pretty much be judged on what the team does in 2019. And I think that's a sign that, management is, they're keeping an eye on him, and ownership knows that, that he's kind of presided over this loose locker room that kind of got out of control, and that they need to get back to the playoffs and kind of start being the organization they used to be.
They also signed, though, two offensive linemen, retained them. What kind of statement did that make?
Well, they wanted to keep these guys together. I was surprised Ramon Foster came back because I thought, you know, they have B.J. Finney, who they had signed the day before, off kind of, you know, pretty much starter's money there. And so, but they brought Ramon Foster back for two more years, which shows that, and this might go back to the Rothel's influence, he really likes his linemen. You know, with the exception of Marcus Gilbert, I think that was more financially motivated.
Sure.
But they've got everybody but him back again, and there's some continuity there, and this will be like the fourth straight year they're together. And, you know, they don't allow many sacks, and they've been producing units in the league, so I think that was important to try to keep everybody intact.
Is this as interesting as...
Well, it's going to be here starting with the next few days, depending on what happens in free agency. Cause, but it is. I mean, put it this way. Usually you're not dealing with these kinds of things in, you know, February and early March with the Antonio Brown saga, where it's, you know, you're checking your phone every 5 minutes. And, you know, fortunately, I was up watching Saturday Night Live the other night. All went down. I didn't have to get rousted out of bed to jump on my computer. So, yeah, see what happens in free agency, because actually the Steelers, for once, might make a first-day signing. Usually they're, you know, waiting until all the top guys are gone and they're picking it over on day three or four.
I'm going to assume the Buffalo Bills thing was a real thing, and what kind of role did it play in terms of what the Steelers ended up getting?
Oh, I think it played a big deal in the fact that, you know, once it came up that Antonio Brown really didn't want to go there, that, you know, he kind of forced his way out of that deal. And I think that just lowered any expectations the Steelers had of getting a number one pick. And as it turned out, a number two. I think that really hurt things there. And, I mean, if the reports out there are true, what the Steelers could have gotten, like, you know, moving up, getting the ninth pick and maybe possibly getting a second or third in there,
right.
That would have been a tremendous return.
Absolutely.
Then you compare that to what they got, and you're like, oh. You know,
but I thought when the Raiders threw in the bag of balls, I thought that was good. I mean,
yeah. Maybe they can throw in that X-ray machine that nobody could find.
Yeah, the one in Oakland nobody could ever find, I'm telling you. It's amazing how all the hospitals didn't have it either. All right.
Yeah.
Joe, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Sure, anytime, guys.
All right, Joe Rutter, Pittsburgh Tribune. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. The Bryce Harper thing is going to be interesting. I mean, they're tracking his spring training at-bats.
Nobody does that.
So back in the 70s. Two walks on Saturday, at least one today so far?
It's spring training.
Yeah. First bat, walk. Next bat, Rhys Hoskins, gone. Home run. I can handle that quite a bit this season. It shouldn't pay that guy that much to walk all the time. But hey, if he gets on base.
Kevin Youkilis was known as, quote, the Greek god of walks, according to Billy Bean in his book. Okay. Billy Bean's book.
Yeah.
That's what he referred to Kevin Youkilis as. And Youk ended up winning a World Series in his lifetime. So, we started out with wrestling and hockey and track and basketball. Men's lacrosse won again. They scored 26 goals. I think somebody said to me they're ranked number one now.
Oh, yes. I saw that this afternoon. Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's awesome. Jeff Tambroni's an awesome guy. I really want to see Jeff have success. I really do. You know, it's like with Missy as well, although Missy Doherty had a tough, tough break. Madison Carter tore her ACL. So that really hurts. Trey Flowers leaves the Patriots for the Detroit Lions. Trent Brown leaves the Patriots for the Raiders. Quan Alexander leaves Tampa Bay for the 49ers. Landon Collins leaves the Giants for the Redskins. LeBron James is still with the Lakers. Oh, wait. Okay, so, I'm sorry. That must be on the ESPN website. That's all they ever do is write stories about LeBron. After a while, like we can can the LeBron stuff.
Shutting down Lonzo Ball. Just waiting for Dad's comments. or he's too busy making sneakers.
I mean, let me put it this way.
Take care of that back order from before Christmas.
One can argue that his game's been shut down since the pregame of the Kentucky game. one can argue that. Excuse me.
This floors me that people are still online buying those baller sneakers, and they're on back order and may not.
Really?
Who knows? Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there are people that have been ordering those before Christmas time. They still haven't gotten their kicks yet. What a mess.
Well, that really wouldn't happen if you dealt with one of the top organizations. Normally they get it to you.
Whereas you have other people like Steph Curry who got a card or a letter from a little girl probably something like 6 or 9 months ago, say, hey, there should be like a woman's style of shoe.
Right.
And he took her idea to heart, and voila, what did we hear about last week? A new Steph Curry model shoe.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Didn't he send her a pair?
I thought so.
I think he sent her a pair. Everyone says he's been very generous with his time and his money. So,
speaking of the Warriors, what, Phoenix? The Suns beat them yesterday?
Well, yeah, I'm glad you did that because I was talking to the suit earlier today and he called them Pahonics. I was like, do you get worried? I mean, I'm really sorry.
I do.
But yeah, Phoenix beat them. The Warriors, I think, are bored. That doesn't mean they're going to win it and just turn it on. But I think right now they're bored. I mean, to be honest with you, it's too easy for them. I don't know. I mean, does the league need them in the final again? I don't know. They're not going to get LeBron. I've always said, and you know how many times I've said it on this show, I will know that the NBA has absolutely made it as a league that is ingrained in our consciousness when Atlanta plays Utah in the final and the ratings are the same as they are now. Look at the NFL. Carolina played Denver 1 year. Carolina and Denver. All right? Yeah, they had Peyton Manning, but he was an app. I mean, no offense to Peyton Manning, one of the greats of all time, but I think he'd be the first to tell you he's kind of a shell of himself. Carolina played Denver in the Super Bowl and got between 100 and 115 million viewers. What does that tell you? That tells me everything. If Atlanta plays Utah in the finals 1 year and the NBA gets the similar rating that it gets right now, that'll tell me that, yeah, the league is spot on. I think that you've had Jordan year after year after year, Kobe and Shaq almost every year, LeBron every single year. They've had that draw of a megastar in the finals that has drawn the casual fan to the table to watch.
Well, if that happens this year, that means Vince Carter would get in.
Yeah, that would be a draw.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.